V-69, RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. From a familiar audience-less studio where countless names had been made and countless careers had ended, Marion DeClercq sat in her usual seat before an unusually sparse panel of three. Two further spots would be rounded out by the remote guests whose names were responsible for much of the expected record-breaking viewership, and the final panel of five was quite possibly the most explosive in the show's history. Before introducing the panel, Marion DeClercq perfunctorily mentioned that Caitlin Judd had unfortunately been unable to attend. In truth, she had been culled to make way for Dan. Her representatives were willing to accept this quietly, given that his presence was doubtless going to utterly dominate the focus, and thus would have left her twiddling her thumbs. DeClercq gave a quick plug to the Il Diavolo movie, whose home media release Caitlin's appearance had been booked to coincide with, long before the specific topic of the show had been decided, introducing a short trailer to precede the hotly anticipated panel discussion. Originally, this special Saturday night episode was going to look back at Contact Day and discuss where the intervening year has taken us, DeClercq said after the 30-second trailer ended. Much of our panel was booked with that in mind, but the remarkable events of the past few days have brought us two more panelists of the highest profile, as well as two very familiar faces and returning guests in the shape of Billy Kendrick and Joe Crabb. We're also joined today by Poppy Bradshaw of the Anti-Contact Geosov movement. The panel's two recent additions are coming to us via satellite and need little introduction. We have John Cole, the ELF's new Western secretary, coming to us from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. And we have none other than Dan McCarthy, coming to us from Birchwood, Colorado. Dan gave a half nod and half smile in recognition of his introduction, a gesture that looked effortless and organic only because of how long Emma had helped him to practice making it so. The final pre-discussion order of business was DeClercq's explanation that today's broadcast would be one of very few in the show's history not to follow the titular format of focusing on two separate topics for 20 minutes apiece. Quite understandably, network heads had decided that it would have been unwise and likely impossible to enforce a topical division between the recent GCC inauguration and the issues surrounding the recent discovery of a supposedly alien triangle. For that reason, the live show would run on a relatively unstructured basis. It would also last for only 45 minutes, with a 5-minute commercial break between the two 20-minute segments to avoid interrupting the flow of discussion any more than necessary. DeClercq explained that the single topic nature of the episode and the fact that two of her five panelists were participating via satellite would lead to a slight change from how things normally played out, with more time for the panelists to express themselves unchallenged and with fewer aggressive interruptions than many episodes tended to feature. The satellite delays, although very slight, could make regular back-and-forth conversations problematic, she explained, and the caliber of the night's guests meant that thorough statements of their positions were what viewers wanted most of all. She began her slow circuit of the panel with Joe Crabb, a one-time shock jock who had often been a lone voice of support for Richard Walker during the tumultuous days of the IDA leak. Crabb was well known for holding American sovereignty above all other considerations, and in recent times had come to be known as a man of few words. Walker's death and Dan McCarthy's humility at his funeral had made Crabb see some things in a new light, and the former foe was now someone Dan expected to be relatively cordial. Joe, to begin, your general thoughts on the GCC and ELF.
Even the likes of me, Crabb began with a knowing grin, even the American exceptionalists and unashamed patriots like me can see that in the face of a beast like the ELF, we need a devil we know like Godfrey. I would like to see our country leading the world and leading the way, taking our own path to handling future contact and inviting allies on our own terms. I would prefer it if we weren't in the GCC, just like I prefer having NASA to the old GSC. But if we weren't in the GCC wouldn't exist. And if the GCC didn't exist, the Russians and Chinese would have everyone else banding together, and we'd be left in the lurch. By joining our staunch allies, or dependents as I see them, we can stand against Eastern aggression in a way that would be far more difficult on our own in these tough economic times.
An approach very much born of pragmatism, you might say? DeClercq prodded.
I would say that, Crabb nodded. I do say that. I'm a pragmatist who wants what's best for his country, just like Richard Walker was. He made mistakes, as we all know, but everything he did was done to protect us from the threat he saw coming from aggressive Chinese expansion. He would have predicted this, you know. I'm absolutely sure of that.
De Klerk turned next to Billy Kendrick, a popular and affable man who had carried himself with a quiet dignity during a long-standing smear campaign, and who had acted with humility when he was ultimately proven right about the existence of intelligent extraterrestrial life. A personal friend of Dan since the days of the IDA leak, when Dan himself was the subject of much ridicule, Billy had since carved out an exceptionally profitable niche as a tour guide to remote locations of extraterrestrial relevance. The likes of Kerguelen and Bouvette Island were no longer must-see sites now that the story surrounding the alien spheres, which had supposedly been discovered on their shores, had been revealed as a masterful hoax by the late Richard Walker, so Billy had returned to his old pre-disclosure career as an author and touring speaker. Billy's latest show was built around his recent best-selling book, The Fork, which philosophically addressed the questions raised by extraterrestrial contact and the options such an epic-defining event presented for an intelligent species. Its abstractions surprised many readers who went in expecting an analysis of the messengers and a deep reflection on Contact Day, but precious few had been disappointed by the mind-expanding insights and questions posed within The Fork's pages. The Fork's tie-in speaking tour was currently filling major cities' largest arenas for multiple nights in a row, with the exhausting 100-date tour narrowly on track to reach 2 million paying attendees. Money had never been the main thing for Billy. Even going back to the days when his sanity and motives had been questioned, he had offered his books and lecture tickets at the lowest prices he could while maintaining a reasonable standard of living. Billy's life had been driven by his tireless pursuit of truth and his burning desire to share his knowledge and beliefs with the widest possible audience. And even now that no one could accuse him of cashing in on conspiracy theories and he could comfortably charge triple what he did and still sell out arenas across the country, he steadfastly maintained his flat pricing structure. Billy was now able to travel by plane and stay in the best hotels during his coast-to-coast tour, rather than live out of a car as he had during the less-attended tours of old, but the money hadn't changed him in the slightest. "What's your take on the split, Mr. Kendrick?" De Klerk asked him. "I know you're close friends with Timo Fiori, who wrestled with his own decision on whether to formally endorse either organization. Was your decision at all influenced by his?"
"No, my position on this is similar to Joe's, albeit for slightly different reasons," Billy said. "Like Joe, I have publicly recognized the GCC, not endorsed it, and even then my limited support, if you really want to stretch the meaning of that word, has come only with great reluctance. I dearly wish that there was one truly global organization, but with the choice that's been presented to me in reality, it's not overly difficult to consider an organization composed of the world's largest democracies somewhat more palatable than one composed of the world's largest dictatorships. Our own kind of politics isn't perfect. Jesus, I've made a career of pointing that out, but at least it's participatory."
Crabb gave a measured nod of acknowledgement.
"But this chaos was utterly inevitable," Billy went on. "In the Five Scenarios book that brought me into the public eye, I wrote at length about how contact could play out post-disclosure. Declarations were in place, supposedly binding ones at that, about how we as a species would deal with extraterrestrial contact. But the real issue is this. All of the old declarations were about contact, not visitation. And now, as we all know, we're not just post-detection or post-contact, we're post-visitation. Our planet has been visited, but the important thing to remember here is that there hasn't been even a modicum of official diplomatic contact. The only contact the messengers have initiated has been with Dan McCarthy."
"And as far as today, Billy," Marianne de Klerk began, glancing at her notes, "what do you see as the way out of this current situation of what feels like deadlock between East and West, and how do you see Dan fitting in?"
Billy considered the question. "Ideally, although the last thing I want to do is put words in Dan's mouth, I'd like to see a truly international, contact-focused collective, and I think he would too.
something like a Global Contact Forum, or GCF, if you will, in which Dan felt able to participate without having to choose a side. To me, that is self-evidently the best way forward, but unfortunately we're currently being led by men and women of ego rather than logic, men and women who live to climb rather than to serve. The clerk mused, not quite personally involved in the discussions, but seeming more so than usual. And as for where you think things will go in the short term, as opposed to your hopes for where things should go. Life is going to be difficult for the ELF if they maintain this current strategy of confrontationalism, he replied without a moment's pause for thought. Western culture is pretty much global culture, and citizens in certain large ELF countries aren't happy that they're being driven further away from the rest of the world. In many cases, these citizens feel very disconnected from their governments in general terms, but this issue is going to highlight that to an all new level. Implicit opposition to universally popular figures like Timo and especially Dan is not going to go down well. But on the point I mentioned about broader cultural shifts in those countries, I think that's something much deeper. Presenting Western powers as the devil incarnate was difficult enough for the Soviet Union 30 years ago. But now that the internet has made the world so much smaller and made Western culture even more dominant, it's all but impossible. Well, de Klerk grinned, we certainly have the right man to tackle that charge, and we'll hand over now. Can you hear us, Mr. Cole? Hello, friends, he began, raising ironic smiles and shakes of the head all around. And a particularly fond hello to my two good friends in Buenos Aires, William and Valerie. I know you're both watching, and I hope you've had a good day so far, because you're probably not going to enjoy the rest of the night too much.